The Republican National Convention begins today and has renominated incumbent President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence for the 2020 election. Like last week's Democratic National Convention, the RNC has had to scale back its plans this year because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Unlike the DNC, the GOP has decided to maintain as much of a traditional look to its convention as possible, with portions of the event taking place in person in Charlotte, North Carolina. Also, the Republican Party released its 2020 platform this weekend. It's the same as its 2016 platform. Our next guest joins us to talk about what to expect this week from the RNC and whether it makes a difference in the campaign. Julian Zelizer is the Malcolm Stevenson Forbes Class of 1941 Professor of History and Public Affairs for the Princeton School of Public and International Affairs. He's the author of his latest book, Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker and the Rise of the New Republican Party. Julian, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's an unusual time, obviously, for political conventions for both parties. Do you think the changes in the format and scale make them less or more impactful than usual?
I think it will be about the same. Since the 1960s, the conventions have not really been places of much decision making, and the parties have structured them around the television camera. They've been scripted and visually set up to appeal to viewers. And I think what we're seeing is an extension of that and the removal, obviously, of delegates. And it's even more tailored toward what people see. But I think the impact will be about the same. There might be a small bump for one of the two parties, but overall, I don't think it will radically alter where the electorate is.
Can you compare and contrast what you saw in terms of messaging from Democrats last week and what we're hearing the priorities will be for Republicans this week?
It'll be very different. I do think that Democrats had some pretty tough warnings, especially former President Barack Obama, about the threat that Donald Trump, the president, poses to American democracy. A lot of the Democratic convention, though, was also trying to focus on the character of Joe Biden. I think this week it's going to take a very different turn. We've already heard a little bit from President Trump. I think this is going to be focused primarily on really destroying how Americans see the character of the person they heard from last week, with some boasts that the economy is doing well in the minds of the administration.
I want to give a listen to the president talking to the in-person delegates in Charlotte today. His speech ran the gamut of excitement for the election, too, as you're saying, attacking Democrats. He warned Republicans that Democrats were going to do whatever they could to win. Here is a listen to some of what he had to say.
We have to be very careful because they're trying it again with this whole 80 million mail-in ballots that they're working on, sending them out to people that didn't ask for them. They didn't ask. They just get them. And it's not fair, and it's not right, and it's not going to be possible to tabulate, in my opinion. It's just my opinion. We have to be very, very careful. And you have to watch. Every one of you, you have to watch. Because bad things happened last time with the spying on our campaign, and that goes to Biden, and that goes to Obama. And we have to be very, very careful. We have to be very, very careful. And this time they're trying to do it with the whole post office scam. They'll blame it on the post office. You could see them setting it up. Be very careful and watch it very carefully, because we have to win. This is the most important election in the history of our country.
So the president, the incumbent president, with an extended attack, it seems like, on the integrity of the election, and which is expected to have a lot of mail-in ballots. What do you think of the messaging, not just there, but from the president over the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think it's also a central theme, in addition to the attacks on Biden and the Democratic Party, to argue that somehow the election is being corrupted by efforts to ensure that everyone can vote. And that does two things. One, not unlike 2016, it raises questions before the election takes place about the outcome, should the outcome not be favorable to the president. But unlike 2016, he is now president of the United States. And this is part of a campaign to stifle efforts in the middle of a pandemic to make sure everyone can vote without having to risk their health. So I think this is more than innocuous rhetoric. It's very serious. And in the end, this can have a very big effect on voting turnout. If we are not set up as a nation to handle and process mail-in voting when the pandemic might be surging in many states come November.
Talking to Julian Zelizer from Princeton University, looking at the Republican National Convention, previewing a little bit, compare and contrast with the Democratic Convention last week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you expect to see? What do you hope to see from Republicans and the president over the course of the week? Join in at 800-642-1234. The party platform, Julian, the Republicans are not issuing a new one. They're sort of, they've kept the 2016 one and not really renewing a new thing. Is that something worthy of notice?
It's interesting. It's interesting they didn't update it, not just because you need to update it, but we're in such a different time in 2020 than we were in 2016. How can a party not consider really making the response to the pandemic, for example, something that needs to be reworked and to put that in as a central part of the platform? So in some ways, it's another step where you diminish some of the traditional mechanisms of the party and you elevate President Trump. He is the message. He is what the convention is about. But it raises questions, I'd say, about some of the concerns that the GOP have if this isn't something they want to work on right now.
This is a tough issue for any incumbent. This pandemic, we haven't seen anything like this for a century. Concerns about the response at the state and national levels. How do you see Republicans tackling this issue that the president doesn't have great approval on for the most part?
It's really tough, and it's not simply tough because it's a tough situation or a hard situation that the president is not handling the best way, but it's an unfolding situation. So now we're in late August, schools are starting to open, and American families who will be important voters are struggling to figure out what will happen to their children. Some of the economic effects might be more severe in the coming months as the weather gets cold. And commerce is a little bit more difficult in the middle of a pandemic. And so Republicans are trying to balance how much do you count on just traditional partisan loyalty, which so far has held very firm, and the president has not suffered within the GOP, versus the potential for some fallout with independent or more moderate voters in the Republican Party as the situation gets worse. And I think a lot of senators and members of the House are basically trying to balance these, but they are erring right now on the side of just supporting the president.
Right now, we're picking up our conversation about the 2020 Republican National Convention. Julian Zelizer is with us, professor of history and public affairs for the Princeton School of Public and International Affairs. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What will you be watching for during this year's RNC? What do you think about the combination of some live event and online? And when it comes to issues of substance, what are you hoping to hear from Republicans? What worries do you have? If you support the president, what do you think he should focus on? If you do not, what did you take out of the Democratic convention last week? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. The president, when he spoke to delegates today, took a moment to call out Wisconsin in his speech in an effort to, again, criticize Democrats for not holding their full convention in Milwaukee this year as planned. Here is a listen.
I do want to show a little bit of a difference because another state that's been very good to me is Wisconsin. And Joe Biden was going to have their convention in Milwaukee, and they didn't go there at all. They didn't do this. We did this out of respect for your state. We didn't do this for any other reason other than respect for the state of North Carolina, because we said we wanted to hold our convention in North Carolina, and I think you're going to remember that, frankly, on November 3rd. We wanted to hold our convention in North Carolina.
And we had the president and vice president, for that matter, in Wisconsin during the Democratic National Convention. Some people, Democrats, pointed this saying, wait a minute, we didn't do this to keep people safe. What do you make of this line of attack, Julian?
Well, look, this is a administration that never expanded its electoral base. So it's going back to 2016 and trying to increase its voter turnout in these key areas where there's some evidence of swing votes. And Wisconsin was obviously extraordinarily important. Obviously, the argument is not Democrats didn't not have their convention for that reason. It's actually out of respect to people in the state. It's an effort to keep everyone safe and healthy. But this is what the president wants to use the next few days to do, to frame how people think of the Democratic Party in a particular way and to undermine any sentiment that might have existed or exist about Biden being someone who's inherently good and caring for the electorate. So we should expect more of the same over the next few nights.
Let's bring on a caller now. Bob is with us in Chippewa Falls. Bob, hi.
Hello.
What'd you want to bring up, Bob?
Well, basically, COVID-19, the candidate for the Republicans said, well, it's 15, it'll disappear. And after 170,000 deaths, his response is, it is what it is. I really don't, I don't see that the guy's a leader. And he's too arrogant to do much about it.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. And that line that Bob referenced, it is what it is, answering a question about deaths due to COVID during an interview. Democrats were definitely playing that up last week, Julian.
Well, yeah, sometimes the line of attack on an administration is pretty obvious. And I think Bob just stated the case. This is an administration that has had a lot of trouble handling, and many would argue has fundamentally mishandled, the greatest crisis of our moment. And it's a pandemic that's had an enormous death toll, and we don't have a handle on it yet. And many states that followed what the president has been arguing from early on in terms of quick reopenings and skepticism about masks and social distancing, we're suffering, and people can't reopen the way we want. And so this is the obvious line of attack. The question is, can Democrats stick to this? Because the president is going to do everything in his power, and he's pretty good at it, to change the conversation or to make you think about the situation in a different way. So the Democrats will have to be very disciplined to keep coming back to that very important point. In 1992, Democrats said it's the economy, stupid, when Bill Clinton ran against George H.W. Bush, meaning stay focused on that issue. And I think the challenge for Democrats in 2020 is it's the pandemic, stupid, meaning they have to stay focused on that core issue.
There's been a lot of attention on how the president has changed the party. We saw, a couple dozen former Republican senators and members of Congress coming out to endorse Democrat Joe Biden today, saying that the president had changed the party to where they don't recognize it. I've been thinking a lot about the progress of the Republican Party over the years with your book on Newt Gingrich. Is the president fundamentally changing his party?
No, I think some of these former members are having a reckoning with what their party has become for some time now. I don't think you get Donald Trump as a nominee several years ago and such strong support for President Trump in the last few years without really understanding that the party's changed. It's been changing since Newt Gingrich came to town in the 1980s, and then the Tea Party came to town in the 2010s. It's moved in a more rightward direction, and it's embraced a kind of partisanship without guardrails. And President Trump thrives in this, but not because he's remaking the party, but because he's a product of this party. So I think some of those members are not being fully open or honest with themselves about what's happened in the past few decades.
In our last minute and a half or so, Julian, when the conventions are all done, what are you going to be watching for during the remainder of the campaign to see how this thing's going to shake out?
Well, I think it's going to be beyond polls and how the polls shift. Which party does a better job of framing the conversation? And do Democrats do a better job framing this as a moment where democracy is under threat and where a major crisis to our nation is not being handled well and where we have a leader who can't lead? Or is it framed about the risks of a Democratic Party who the president says is moving and drifting to the left and all kinds of dangers and chaos that lurk in our nation? And which party does a better job of shaping how we talk about the stakes of the election and what their opponents are about?
And briefly, just to bring things back home here, Julian, do you see Wisconsin being maybe the deciding state this time around?
Not the deciding state, but a deciding state. Even though this is a dramatic few years, the Electoral College is still pretty similar to what it was a few years ago. And I think it's going to come down to a handful of states, and Wisconsin certainly will be one of them. If President Trump can't deliver in Wisconsin, I think the Republicans understand they're going to be in trouble.
Julian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Julian Zelizer is professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's the author of a number of books. His latest is Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker, and the Rise of the New Republican Party. He joined us today to talk about the Republican National Convention, which started today, and how this year is different from previous years because of the COVID-19 pandemic.